Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ACTUS podcast, a bi-weekly program dedicated to bringing you closer to the difference makers in CDI and sharing the latest news relevant to the CDI profession and ACTUS. I'm Linnea Archibald, the Associate Editorial Director for ACTUS, and I'll be your host for today's show. Today's topic is pre-bill reviews, and my guest today is Pyle Sinha, MBA, RHIA, CCDS, CDIP, CCS, CCSP, CCDSO, CRCR, CRC, who is the Director of Coding Integrity and Education at Montefiore Medical Center. Also, a quick reminder that the ACTUS podcast offers 0.5 ACTUS CEU for the first 4 days after posting, which can be used toward recertifying your CCDS or CCDSO credential. We will share the instructions at the end of the show, so stay tuned for that. And now, before we jump into the topic at hand, a brief word about today's sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by SmarterDX, clinical AI that empowers your CDI team to review 100% of patient charts. What if you could shift your CDI team's workload from less rote, manual work to practicing at the top of their license? SmarterDX helps more than 70 leading health systems do just that. It captures more than 10,000 diagnoses and procedures with proprietary AI algorithms and presents them to your team for validation, all before final billing. Uncover revenue and quality opportunities to the tune of 5-to-1 ROI starting day one. Learn more at smarterdx.com or by following the link in today's show notes. And now back to the show. Thanks again for joining me today, Pyle. I'm really excited to have you here with me today, and we are going to discuss some post-discharge pre-bill reviews. So to kick us off, let's start with one of the most common questions we get about this topic. If an organization already has kind of a concurrent CDI process, why would they need some sort of post-discharge pre-bill review process as well?
So that's a great question. Even when a facility has a strong concurrent CDI process, a post-discharge pre-bill review still plays a critical role, right? Because it will serve as a final validation before the claim is submitted to payer. Concurrent CDI really focuses on improving documentation while the patient is still admitted. But the clinical record isn't usually complete at that point, right? So you're still missing the discharge summary, your final diagnoses, path reports, which can be added after the patient is discharged. So a post-discharge review will allow you to evaluate the final coded record at this point, because coding has now validated documentation, captured their principal secondary diagnoses, they validated their CC and MCC capture. If it's an APR, they've looked at the SOI and the ROM, and they've reviewed those procedures, and they're ultimately ensuring that the coding and documentations are aligned. So it provides an opportunity to catch like a potential compliance or quality issues that can impact DRGs, your quality metrics that may be at play, or risk adjustment. From a rev integrity perspective, which is where my team and I really function out of, this post-discharge pre-bill review will function as a denial prevention strategy. So your high-risk DRGs that payers commonly target, we all know sepsis is one of them and many others. So while the concurrent CDI will improve documentation in real time, the pre-bill review will act as your last checkpoint to ensure that the record at hand is accurate, compliant, and you could defend it if there ever is a denial opportunity before the claim goes out the door.
Yeah, and the name of the game, I feel like these days with denials, is one, as much denial prevention as you can manage, and also making sure if that denial does happen, like you said, that you have a really strong leg to stand on to defend against it. Denials probably aren't leaving us anytime soon.
Nope.
So you want to have a good defense there.
Absolutely.
Totally. So what kind of makes these different from a, you know, those traditional concurrent CDI reviews that our listeners may be already used to? Are there, what sort of issues would come up during this type of pre-bill review that staff might not encounter when they're doing just their regular concurrent review?
So pre-bill is different from that traditional concurrent CDI review, right? Because it's after the patient has been discharged, the record in essence is complete, coding has now been assigned, which is done by the HIM associates or coders, rather than during the patient's admission, right? So concurrently, you're focused on improving physician documentation in real time while the patient is still in the hospital. Pre-bill, on the other hand, you're evaluating the record after it's been final coded. And at this particular juncture, you're making sure that the documentation, coding, and clinical validation of certain diagnoses all align before that claim is submitted. Because the record is complete at this stage, pre-bill reviewers, you can identify issues that wouldn't have been visible during the concurrent process. Like your discharge summary is now present, you have path or lab results that may confirm or rule out conditions, and you also have your procedure documentation, like the op note that was previously still pending for that attending to transcribe. Now that has been completed. This is also where your coding related issues become more apparent, right? So your principal diagnosis, which can drive your DRG, the missed CC or MCC capture, DRG validation, your procedure coding accuracy, and also sometimes the sequencing concerns will be made apparent. Pre-bill reviews, they uncover your clinical validations issues before the payers receive that claim. So your sepsis, respiratory failure, malnutrition, AKI, it doesn't matter if you're in New York or you're in Florida or California. A lot of the payers use payer criterias, right, when they want to deny a diagnosis based on that clinical validation. And then additionally, the reviewers at this point, they could also look at quality indicators and address those potential risks before that claim is billed.
Awesome. That's helpful. And this sort of touches to that, but CDI teams and every team, I'm sure your team as well, is already stretched pretty thin generally. So adding another responsibility to their plate could be a real challenge. So how could leaders effectively cover this extra work, particularly if they don't have the budget to hire more staff? And do you think it's more effective to dedicate a staff member or multiple members to these reviews and take them kind of off of the concurrent reviewers' plates? Or should it be more of a shared responsibility across the team?
I think the key is not adding more work. It doesn't matter if you're in any part of rev cycle, right? You want to make sure that you're being strategic about which cases truly need a pre-bill review. As leaders, we want to focus on risk-based prioritization, such as your higher weighted DRGs, your ECMO, your vents, your surgical cases, your mortality cases, and even those payer targeted diagnoses that you get frequent denials on, your short stay inpatient cases, or any encounters that you feel would impact your quality metrics or even reimbursement. By narrowing the scope, the team can then focus their efforts where the impact is the highest, right? So operationally, you could use a hybrid approach. I know we do that at our facility. Instead of removing multiple staff members from concurrent reviews, you want to designate a small group of experienced CDI specialists or rotating reviewers that will focus on this particular cases. They technically tend to have like strong clinical validation background, coding knowledge, which makes them well suited to identify those DRG documentation and denial risk. And at the same time, your broader CDI team can then support by flagging those potential high risk cases during their concurrent work. So you're kind of working hand in hand. And again, technology and collaboration between CDI and coding can help reduce that burden. So your work queues, rule-based cases that you can identify during the pre-bill portion can make a huge impact. And then, you know, also you leveraging technology, you're not leaving CDI to manually search for them. They're actually getting identified and tagged in a dashboard of some sort, which makes, you know, those highest risk opportunities being able to capture as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and that's a perfect segue into my next question, which is really about the technology piece. So, how does technology play into these pre-bill reviews? How can leaders and their teams kind of leverage the tools they already have for the reviews? And on the flip side, if they are looking for something new, what should they be looking for in a tool that could aid them with these pre-bill reviews?
So, in my experience, technology plays a significant role, right? It makes things possible. Even with limited resources, whether you're in coding or you're in CDI, it lends to a huge benefit, right? It can identify and prioritize those right cases for review rather than requiring staff to like manually search those discharge encounters. You could use existing tools within your EHR or CDI platforms to create work queues or swim lanes, if you will, that automatically flag those high-risk cases. So your sepsis, your high-weighted DRGs, your mortality cases, even some short stays. And payer-targeted diagnosis can come into play in this portion as well. Leaders, you can often leverage tools that they already have in place by, using rules or edits or even dashboards that can identify those encounters once coding is complete. Making the CDI, adding additional work to CDI wouldn't be feasible, right? So you want to be smarter and you want to do it with the resources that you have. You can't have CDI overwork 100 encounters in a day, but out of those 100 encounters, if you can prioritize maybe those 12, you will make a better impact. And using these tools, you could look for those analytics that highlight patterns and denials and documentation gaps, and then you could use that in turn to provide that provider documentation. And the CDI specialists can then spend their time on clinical analysis rather than the admin task.
Yeah, and that's really the goal, right? I think the goal of most CDI technology these days is to free up the staff's time for more complex issues, whether that's, clinical validation or provider education or any of the myriad other things that CDI is involved in. There's just better uses of their time, than sifting through charts that won't have opportunity for them. Something you said about kind of leveraging the tools and making the most of them made me want to ask a follow-up question about, are there questions that you think leaders should be asking their vendors if they're interested in doing these pre-bill reviews? Like, are there particular functionality or things that the system could offer that would be helpful for these reviews specifically?
Absolutely. They should really ask, do they have ability to track queries, review outcomes, right? And even document their rationale for clinical validation decisions that they made so that if later that particular case happens to get audited or denied, they can easily reference back to what truly transpired during the concurrent and the pre-bill portion of the review.
Yeah, that tracking piece is really important, especially as leaders, I think.
Absolutely. Data tells a story.
Yes. And I mean, you know this about me, Pyle. I love some data, so I'm with you all.
Yes.
So I mentioned this a little bit, but obviously, provider education is such a big piece of what CDI does. So how could teams use the information that they're learning, the opportunities they're finding in the pre-bill reviews to sort of close that loop and improve their provider education efforts?
So, because these reviews are happening after the full record and coding has been completed, you can see patterns more clearly, right? So, you can look at the documentation gaps, diagnoses that lack the clinical support, or conditions that are consistently being clarified after a query. So, instead of treating each case as an isolated fix, organizations can use this information to identify recurring trends, right? Either it's by service line, diagnoses, or even providers. One effective way to close the loop is to translate those trends into targeted education. And that targeted education isn't only for providers. It could be for coding. It could be for CDI. And in fact, I think it should be for all three groups, because if we work together, we're going to make a better impact. If we're all working in silos, not so much, right? So for example, if your pre-bill review, you uncover an issue like sepsis, right? Sepsis has been documented, but there's no clinical validation. Getting this information upstream to CDI when the patient is still in-house, you can provide that targeted education to the provider and to CDI to ensure that that said diagnosis is clinically validated before it goes out the door. For coding, on the other hand, while they have that case in front of them after the patient has been discharged and they find that clinical validation piece is missing, they can then escalate to their CDI counterparts and make sure that that said diagnosis is clinically validated by the provider and it's billed. Another step is partnering closely with coding and CDI and quality, right? So the three teams have to work together. It not only identifies documentation gaps, but it also identifies areas where coding and clinical interpretation will intersect, and it'll allow the team to deliver consistent guidance to providers. So it's not like coding is saying one thing to the provider, CDI is saying another. It's happening together. And more importantly, when you as a leader present providers with data showing improvement opportunities and the downstream impact that it has on denials, DRG downgrades, or quality measures, the education becomes more meaningful. And in that way, pre-bill review findings, they become a continuous feedback loop that helps provider refine their documentation, and it improves the accuracy and the CMI over time.
Yeah, that's great. It's kind of an evolution of CDI's work already. Like, it's just another way that they can impact all of these wonderful things for their organization. So as we close out, I want to talk a little bit more about metrics, like you just mentioned. So what outcomes or metrics should leaders kind of expect to see improve with an effective post-discharge pre-bill review process? And how can they then communicate that success to their organizational stakeholders?
So one of the most immediate impact is your improvement in coding and DRG accuracy, right? Since the review is now allowing teams to validate that final coding before the claim is submitted. And you'll see stronger CC and MCC capture if it's an MS-DRG, SOI, and ROM increase will happen automatically. There will be more accurate principal diagnosis selection, better alignment when it comes to clinical documentation and the coded data. Another important thing would be the denial reduction, right? Particularly for your payer targeted condition. So it depends on your facility, what it is that you're constantly seeing an increase in denials. For a lot of us, it has to do with sepsis, respiratory failure, your malnutrition, and AKI. Having that metric before your pre-bill reviews went into place and then post-bill would be one way to gauge that. By validating these diagnoses before billing, you can reduce clinical validation denials, DRG downgrades, and again, your CMI should increase because now the final record more accurately reflects the patient's severity of illness and the resource utilization during this admission. Your quality metrics will also improve. So during these pre-bill reviews, you can identify documentation issues that affect mortality indicators, your PSI, readmissions, and ensuring that the coded data accurately reflects the clinical picture. And then when it comes to communicating to your stakeholders, you want to focus on metrics that clearly demonstrate value, such as denial avoided, revenue protected, your DRG shifts that were identified prior to billing, and trends in documentation improvement over time. You can use dashboards or periodic summaries to help illustrate that. And again, the process should support both financial integrity and compliance. Framing the results in terms of risk mitigation, revenue protection, and data accuracy It helps stakeholders understand that the pre-bill review is not just an operational step, but a strategic safeguard for the organization.
And that is a wonderful way for us to close out. So we've reached the end of our time today. So thank you so much, Pyle. This has been really helpful, and I'm sure our listeners will enjoy it as well. Since we have run out of time today, if our audience has any questions about this topic, you can always email the ACTUS team at info@actus.org. And thank you again, Pyle. This was really wonderful.
Thank you for having me.
Now it's time for the ACTUS Update, a regular segment featuring the latest news on what's going on inside the association. First, as I'm sure most of you have heard by now, the ACTUS conference is happening next month, April 20th through 23rd in Chicago, and we really are hoping to see many of you there. If you are attending to the conference this year, I do want to remind you to book your hotel room now in the ACTUS room block. That room block discounted rate expires on the 27th of March, so please, if you have not gone ahead and booked your room, do that now so you lock in the best rate available. This year's conference features five tracks of education, including some fan favorites, the clinical and coding, leadership and collaboration, and quality and denials management tracks are all back. And then we also have two brand new tracks this year, which are focused on pediatrics and neonatology and technology and analytics. As always, the conference is a really great opportunity to gather your CEUs for a whole variety of certifications and credentialing organizations. This year, the conference will offer 13 credits for the following organizations: ACCME, ACTUS, AHIMA, ANCC, and NARI. In addition to earning those CEUs, attendees always have a really great opportunity to, of course, learn from industry experts, but also to network with peers from across the country. The conference is really the highlight of our own team's year, and we always leave the event with a ton of new ideas and, frankly, just energy to carry us through the next year. And we know that many of you feel the same. So we really hope that we'll see you in Chicago next month. My second update is that our sister association, the National Association of Healthcare Revenue Integrity, or NARI, is currently collecting responses to their annual State of Revenue Integrity Industry Survey until March 30th. The survey takes a snapshot of the current shape of revenue integrity, covering core topics including charge master, denials, program management, and a lot more. And it also points the way toward future developments for the revenue integrity industry. The results are shared both as a report as part of NARI's annual Revenue Integrity Week, which happens June 1st through 5th this year, and also in an accompanying webinar. And it provides an essential benchmark and a platform for ongoing dialogue in the community about best practices and strategies for success. So we do hope that you'll take a few moments to respond and help our friends at NARI gather this very important information. My third and final update today is that there is a new white paper out now and available to ACTUS members focused on query ethics. For those of you who might not be familiar with ACTUS white papers, they are a benefit of ACTUS membership, and they discuss best practice, advance new ideas, increase knowledge, or offer suggestions for administrative simplification. These papers are written typically by the ACTUS advisory board, but they can also be written by another board or committee and reviewed by the advisory board prior to publication. White papers are less formal than a position paper, but are still peer-reviewed rigorously prior to publication. This new paper was authored by the ACTUS advisory board. The paper, titled Safeguarding Ethical Documentation Practices in Querying, Peer-to-Peer Discussion, and Technological Initiatives, aims to identify areas of compliance risk and ethical concern and offer guidance for healthcare professionals regarding documentation practices in the health record, specifically surrounding queries, peer-to-peer conversations, and the use of AI-driven solutions. It is intended to supplement the ACTUS-AHIMA Guidelines for Achieving a Compliant Query Practice Brief, which was last updated in 2022. The paper is available for ACTUS members to download now in the white paper section under the Member Resources tab in the main website menu. Queer compliance was also the topic of the February 12th quarterly member call, so if you would like another deep dive into the topic, that call would be an excellent companion to the paper. And those are all of my updates today. So as always, you can find the links for more information about everything I just talked about in today's show notes. As a reminder, before we close out, each ACTUS podcast episode offers 0.5 ACTUS CEU, which can be used toward recertifying your CCDS or CCDSO credential for those of you who listen to the show in the first 4 days from the time of posting. To receive your 0.5 CEU, go to the show page on ACTUS.org by clicking on the ACTUS podcast link under the Free Resources tab, and then click on today's episode from the list on that page. Then simply scroll down to the recording of today's episode and click play. At the end of the video, when the timer gets to zero, a link to the CEU evaluation will appear. Simply click on that, take the survey, and your certificate will be automatically emailed to you upon submitting that brief evaluation. Those instructions are also laid out on the show page, so you can follow along there too. To ensure your certificate reaches you and doesn't get trapped in your organization's spam filters, we suggest that you use a personal email address when completing the CEU evaluation form. The cutoff for today's episode is Sunday, March 15th at 11 p.m. Eastern. After that point, the CEU period will close and you will no longer be eligible for the 0.5 CEU for this week's episode. And with that, we have reached the end of today's ACTUS podcast. We will be back in 2 weeks on Wednesday, March 25th, with a new episode hosted by Editorial Manager of Products and Events, Carla Kozak. If you would like to receive reminders about each episode, make sure you're subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, CDI Strategies, which always includes a link to the new episode when it's available. You can listen to the show anytime on the ACTUS website or via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. All of the links we discussed during today's episode will be available in the show notes. And as always, we would really appreciate it if you would take a minute to leave us a 5-star review on your podcast app to help others find our show. Our intro and outro music is Media Noche by Dion Key, and our ad music is Take Me Higher by Jazar, both obtained from the Free Music Archive. If you have any suggestions for future guests or topics, you can always email us at info@actus.org. And until next time, take care, everyone.